with Brad Thompson and Chris Ranji. I'm Randy Carricker. Joining us now on the Brown and Crouppen Celebrity Line is Yahoo's Eric Edholm, who obviously did a great job of covering the draft over the weekend. You can follow him on Twitter at Eric_Edholm. Good to have you with us, sir. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. I was just thinking, boy, it'd be pretty bad if Drew didn't give his seal of approval of his former teammate, right? I mean, my goodness.
Yeah, and I think there were some extenuating circumstances. I know last year during training camp, Albert O was injured. There might have been some other things going on internally with that team. I think, Eric, that the Broncos got a steal with that choice.
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously a fascinating player. And, you know, it feels like for 2 years we've been saying, hey, this is the first round tight end. So there may have been a slight bias. Now, obviously, you know, he fits the mold size-wise. You know, we're talking about a guy who's over 6'5", you know, around 260 pounds. And, you know, to run as well as he did at the combine was sort of eye-opening. Long arms, big hands, you know, just that's how you draw him up for a tight end. But obviously, there's some holes in his game, clearly. I mean, he's not an inline blocker like you'd expect for someone that size. And, you know, the reduced production, even with a quarterback change, had to be at least accounted for. And it did look like he went, you know, it felt like he had long stretches between big plays and would just sort of disappear at times. That's sort of the things that I heard from scouts. But, yeah, I mean, obviously there's plenty of intrigue there and enough so that the Broncos felt pretty good about it.
We got to like the familiarity, at least, with Drew Lock, and just sticking with the Broncos and sticking with Drew Lock. They had to be pretty happy at 15 to have Jerry Jeudy sitting for them, ripe for the picking. I mean, that seems like one heck of a weapon for Drew.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And, I mean, they have Cortland Sutton, a pretty big receiver who can kind of be their intermediate guy, their jump ball, 50-50 ball guy, that sort of thing. And you add Jeudy to the mix and – you know, he's probably even better than his 2019 season showed. It was obviously a very crowded Alabama receiving core. We could be talking about four eventual first-round picks, which is just amazing when you think about it. But, yeah, I mean, he really is a great player who, you know, doesn't have outstanding size, isn't a true blazer. I mean, the guy they drafted around later, KJ Hamler, is a faster player. But I still say he's a special receiver and that he'll make a huge difference there.
Maybe one of the worst things going for Denver is being in a division with the Kansas City Chiefs, but based on the draft and on paper, it looks like a team that improved itself considerably.
Yeah. I mean, you could argue that, hey, look, this really does put the pressure on Drew to take a big step forward this year. And obviously for their offensive line to hold up on the blocking end of things. But I mean, I look at them and say, right, if they were in another division, they have enough talent to vie for a division crown. So right now I think the Chiefs are firmly on top, but you know, the speed they added on offense, they kind of sorted out their secondary a little bit. Vic Fangio is shaping that defense up. I kind of like what they're doing there. I really sort of feel like this is going to be a more competitive team and a more high scoring team that really started the season slowly and then picked it up a little bit when Drew got his shot. And they just sort of found a little bit of a groove towards the end of last year.
Eric Edholm of Yahoo with us on 101 ESPN. And Eric, as you know, Chris Ranji is a Bears fan, and we're all intrigued by the approach of having 9 tight ends on the roster. I think that's really the way to go if you're headed towards the future of the National Football League.
They released one.
They released, well, yeah, Dax Raymond got cut today. That's right. I actually kind of like Dax Raymond, but a year ago anyway. But, yeah, it's become a little bit of a running gag here, right, with Jimmy Graham coming in, and they sign a few other guys, and then they obviously draft Cole Kmet out of Notre Dame. But, you know, they have two different tight end spots that they want to use, and obviously they're going to sort through these guys pretty quickly once we get to training camp, assuming there is a training camp and all that. But, yeah, I mean, they were clearly disappointed in their play at that position. Trey Burton gets released. Adam Shaheen could be next. You know, it's a way of sort of carpet bombing the position a little bit and trying to find out who can stick and who won't. But they'll keep 4 of them, I think, and that'll be a much better room than they had a year ago.
So now the fifth-year option for Mitch Trubisky is probably not going to happen, according to reports over the weekend. So what is going to happen with him?
Yeah, I mean, and that's, you know, that salary is only guaranteed for injury, and sometimes it works out. Like, you know, the Bears did pick up Kyle Fuller's fifth-year option, and he really proved himself, you know, as he approached free agency. And, you know, and I thought played pretty well last year as well. So there's always the opportunity for a young quarterback who has had his ups and downs to still, you know, have that second act, so to speak. But, you know, it's probably going to either have to do with him beating out Nick Foles, playing at a higher level than he did either of the past two seasons, and especially last year, or, you know, possibly just being prepared to move on and go to a new team eventually and, you know, maybe start fresh, right? I mean, I even if he were to win that job in Chicago here, I just there's such a stigma against him now, and there's such a, you know, it just sort of feels like things are stacked against him. He and Nagy have tried to forge some sort of harmony as coach and quarterback, and, you know, it's been a sort of a labor of love at this point, but I don't know. I kind of see that, you know, his path may be headed down a different road at some point if he can't beat out the veteran.
Over under 5.5 starts for Trubisky next year.
Good number, yeah. I mean, Foles has had some injuries, so that, you know, I might. I mean, if Foles wins the job, obviously he should and plays well. He should hold on to it for 16. So it's one of those like coin flip type of deals in the sense that, you know, he's probably only getting in there if Foles gets hurt. How has his history been a little bit concerning at times? Yeah, so not a huge deal, but still possibility. So I wouldn't touch that bet just because you never know with the Bears. And if there's some pressure on Nagy, I mean, anything could happen.
Well, I was going to ask you your general draft question about what was going on, but I wanted to follow up on the Bears here for a moment. Do you think Ryan Pace has at all any sort of, is he in danger at all? Like, does he have to do a good job here in the next year or so? Otherwise, his job's in jeopardy.
It's hard to say. I mean, I haven't sensed in hearing him talk, you know, that there's this, I mean, you know, when he talks about urgency, he understands, look, I mean, this is a results-based business. So I think, you know, any general manager, regardless of their status on the team, wants to win, but I haven't sensed any sort of panic that, you know, he's gotten word from management or anything like that. It's a win or else type of deal for him or for Nagy or for anybody else. But, you know, it's clear. I mean, they changed, what, 3 assistant coaches on the staff, some big moves. And, you know, they obviously made some aggressive plays in free agency, maybe more aggressive than people would like to see up here. But I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. General managers have a shorter leash than they did a generation or two ago. It wouldn't stun me, but you'd have to feel pretty darn good about the guy replacing him after, you know, a shorter spell with Phil Emery and John Fox and company before that.
Eric Edholm of Yahoo is with us on 101 ESPN, and in reading your reviews, one thing strikes me again, and I feel this way almost every year, Eric, and I get the sense that you do too. The way that Baltimore, the Ravens, approach the draft is the way that most logical fans would approach it, too. It seems like after the draft weekend, we always think Baltimore did well, and the results on the field generally show them to do well.
Yeah. I mean, they're selectively aggressive in spots, not this year, but in the past. You know, they targeted Lamar Jackson and traded up for him at the end of round one, you know. And they're not perfect, right? I mean, they took, you know, Hayden Hurst 2 years ago, and, you know, he was traded to Atlanta. So they make picks that don't always work out, but there's always this sense of they have a clear vision going into the draft, and they usually execute it, if not to perfection, at least pretty darn close to what they imagine coming in. It just sort of, you know, I texted a guy who works for the Ravens. I said, one of these days I'm going to hate one of your picks, maybe. Like, I don't know when, but it's going to happen at some point. So I loved it. And they traded a pick next year for a guy in round 7 in James Prochet that I think I was actually stunned that he was gone, you know, that it took him so long to go off the board. I thought he was a 4th rounder. So even the late round value got me excited. But then again, I'm a draft dork, so what can I say?
Maybe they'll start something new. This will be a trend where GMs and head coaches will be neighbors if in fact, they continue to do their thing.
Hey, if it works, right? I mean, obviously, this has changed circumstances for everybody. And if that's going to work, right, there's a lot open, you might as well take advantage of it.
No doubt. All right, I know leading up to the draft, you do so much prep. You do countless mock drafts. In any of those mocks, did you have Jordan Love to the Packers?
I did, yeah. I actually had them picking him at number 30. Not the last one, of course. And my running joke over the weekend was, every year, my February mock draft seems to have those type of hits, whereas my April mock draft looks, you know, kind of a tattered mess a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, it was just one of those things where, and I did this for Drew Lock a year ago. I put Drew to Green Bay at whatever they were picking in round one last year. You know, at some point I figured they were going to draft a quarterback, and they had brought in Drew for a late visit. It just sort of made me think, huh, maybe this could happen last year. It didn't. They passed on him a couple different times. But, you know, this year I think they saw Love, and it's not stunning because when you watch him, there are little Mahomesian moments. There are little Aaron Rodgers-like flares from him in his game. It's way too inconsistent. It's not polished at all, but I'm sure Matt LaFleur saw that and said, I can coach this guy, right? I can work with this dude, and we'll take our time with him, and we're not going to rush him into the lineup. Now, what that means for Rodgers in the short term as far as not getting more weapons and what it means for his long-term future in Green Bay, I have no idea. And I don't even know that they do. I think they just sort of feel like it was too good a value at that point, even if others agree.
I want to stay in the NFC North for a moment. How do you think the Vikings did with their 8 million picks?
Right. I know. I mean, they were just banging out line drives left and right, too. I mean, it felt like 10 of them were B-plus selections. You know, it was just very, 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 very solid. Great value, positional need, you know, nice player that fits the system. Whatever the case may be, pick after pick, I just thought, I can't argue with that. Can't argue with that. Now, could you argue that 15 is overkill? Sure, because how many roster spots do they truly have open? That's the question I have. They're also going to have like 10 or 11 or 12 picks next year possibly. So, you know, they did try to trade up into round one. There was a player they liked up in the, you know, kind of the 12, 13, 14 range. They were unsuccessful. So, you know, they had a cut their eyes on somebody up there. They made a couple moves, but yeah, I mean, when they got the talent haul that they did overall, maybe nothing terribly flashy, but again, a lot of really, really good players. I kept thinking, I'm not going to argue with this. It just seems, you know, sort of fruitless to do that.
Hey, Eric, before we let you go, we need to find out what you thought of Miami taking Tua at number 5.
I loved it. I you know, if I'm sitting back and grading these general managers, I'm not going to reward them for being conservative or safe or playing it, you know. I just felt that, let's take health out of the equation. Who's the better quarterback? To me, Tua Tagovailoa is better than Justin Herbert. I reflected that in my pre-draft rankings. The health is something you cannot overlook. But if they felt good about the medicals, which they clearly did, they decided, look, we've got a billion picks. We're trying to build something great, not something very good or good. Let's take the risk. And if it doesn't work out, we can admit our mistake in 2 years and move on. But right now, I don't know. I just have a feeling it was absolutely the right call there.
Eric, great stuff. Thanks. Always good to have you with us. We appreciate it.
All right. Keep hanging in there, boys. See ya.
You too. Eric at Home, Yahoo. You can read his work at yahoosports.com.